Welcome, one and all, to episode 91 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, tonight's episode is a preview of the JV NFL, the feeder system of the NFL, the SEC. I'm excited about this one. It's going to be a fun show tonight. We are big on one of the quarterback prospects in this preview. This is a guy we'll label this year's sleeper, and he doesn't even have to come out. But he'll be one to watch. But this is a stacked class outside of maybe the quarterback position. So we'll get to that tonight. We also have a giveaway from our friends over at RotoViz. So a little later in the show, and have you guys with a chance to listen. Make sure you follow the guys over at RotoViz at 14 Team Mocker. I want to make sure I get all their Twitter names right here, because I got a lot of them that helped me out with this. But at
there's the Godfather at Fantasy Douche,
at Matt F the Oracle, that's Matthew Friedman, and at Roto Doc, and then at Spider, but no E, the number 2 Y Banana. So all good guys over there at RotoViz. They gave us a 10-month option to give away to our listeners, and we really appreciate that. And a little later in the show, we'll tell you how you can win that. But biggest thing, make sure you're following all those guys on Twitter, and that'll be part of it. So, but let's get into it tonight. SEC, maybe from top to bottom, the best conference in terms of draft prospects on multiple teams. Yeah. I would argue that maybe the Big Ten has just as many talented draft prospects.
Yeah, because they have Ohio State. I mean, that's fair.
and Penn State this year, let's be fair. And Penn State. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Saquon Barkley, correct.
But they have but the SEC probably has more teams with guys that are going to get day one, obviously, but especially day two and day or round two and round three, where the money's made in the draft. And let's start with the quarterbacks like we always do. I know some of you get bored with this, but let's be honest, the quarterback is the most important of sports. And so we got to talk about these guys. And
we get to talk about quarterbacks, because if we name one that ends up being a thing later on, then we get the, we were right pedigree. We get that, right. That value on Twitter, if we tweet about it, or if we can put it out there on our podcast, and we can retweet this episode in January when, you know, Gil Brandt names a guy, then we're a step ahead. So that's right, why we talk about quarterbacks. Also to tell you which ones are bad.
Exactly. And we like to be firstest in all of everything we do. So
if we're not firstest, then there's no point in doing the show, right, Seth?
Exactly. Exactly. And this is an intriguing class, I would say. I wouldn't say great, but there's one name that stands out. We'll go with him last, though. So let's start with the Arkansas quarterback, Austin Allen. I've seen some love coming to Austin Allen. We have a buddy that's an Arkansas fan, and he's not really high on Austin Allen. He kind of reminds him of all the other Allens that have been through there recently. Oh, wait, that's Cody Kessler, my bad. But, you know, he's kind of in that realm of quarterbacking based on what we've been told. Would you not agree with that?
Yeah, I think he's even worse than that, because I'm not trying to be a jerk about this, but you know, one of the things I like to look about with all college quarterbacks when they're coming out in their draft year or in the years preceding that is third down conversion rates, and especially third down longs. I think that gives you an idea how these guys react under pressure. And Austin Allen in third down and long, which I qualify as 7 or more yards, last year he was 26 of 63, which is 41.3% completion percentage. He converted first downs 17 times. That's 27% of the time. And he threw 5 interceptions in that scenario. This is a guy who threw 15 interceptions overall last year. When I looked at Brandon Allen a couple years ago I thought that he was a guy that was fit for the Arkansas system. Now, Brandon Allen's a backup in Jacksonville, and I just don't see Austin Allen becoming much more than that. He's a senior. He's around 6 foot, 6'1", between 205, 215 pounds, so he doesn't have the prototypical starting size. As quarterbacks go, he's just a guy. He's going to be a late-round pick to undrafted free agent. I know he might get some love because he might put some numbers up in that offense this year. They do run, they do take some snaps under center, which seems to be a real draw for NFL scouts, but it doesn't necessarily equate to being proficient in a pro style, which is how it's kind of conveyed in the draft media. So this is a guy who does run some good play action, roll out, and can connect down the field, but he just hasn't been special at all to this point. And as a, you know, as a fifth year senior, I don't see any reason to hype this guy.
The next guy is a transfer from Notre Dame. I believe he was named the starter today. Was that correct?
Yeah, he's been named the starter. Yeah. Like you said, another transfer, another guy who's about 6 feet, 6 foot one, 225 pounds, 220, 225 pounds. This guy's only got, what, 3 or 4 career starts, and he's left-handed, which is really unusual for starters. So who are we talking about, Seth?
Malik Zaire, now at Florida, has zero chance of getting drafted after everything you just said. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, he split time with Deshaun Kizer. The Kizer-Zaire thing was like a watered-down bad version of Cardale Jones and JT Barrett. Zaire's down in Florida now with the Gators. He's a hard worker from all accounts. He doesn't really have a chance to get drafted, though, does he?
I don't really think so. I mean, Zaire won the job as a result of toward the end of the year when Everett Golson was there and was struggling. And Zaire got hurt at the beginning of Kizer's freshman year, redshirt freshman year, and then Kizer took over. And frankly, I don't understand why there was a competition coming back. Kizer, I felt, earned the starting job with his play in 2015. But for some reason, Kelly wanted to give Zaire a shot. He gave him the shot. It didn't work out. This guy really doesn't have much of a starting resume. And then, again, left-handed quarterbacks are very unusual in the NFL, especially guys his height. That is also unusual. So as far as Florida goes, they've kind of been dipping into that transfer well. They had Austin Appleby and now Zaire. So I guess that's the way to kind of shortcut to success as far as their coach is concerned. But I don't – it doesn't seem to me like Zaire is a big-time draft prospect. There are some people who think he ran Brian Kelly's offense pretty well, but and that includes our friend Brendan Leister, who we had on a show earlier this summer. But I just don't know that that translates into being an NFL prospect.
And it starts – and I'll start this one with Nick Fitzgerald out of Mississippi State, who has basically broken every single record that Dak Prescott set at Mississippi State for quarterback play. But here's the thing about Nick Fitzgerald. One, he's a redshirt junior, so he does not have to declare. And more importantly, he's like a 50% passer at this point in his career. He is a run-first quarterback. He had 37 total touchdowns, I believe it was, last year. 21 through the air, and 54%. Again, that's neither of those things are, you know, strong, but he is 3 years removed from running the wing T in a Georgia high school offense. The question is, and I've seen this comparison, and I think his throwing motion's better, but I don't know if he's the overall player, but I've seen the comparison to Tim Tebow. He's intriguing to me because can he develop into a real quarterback? Can he develop into a guy that is more than a runner at 6'4", 230, you know the NFL is going to be salivating. And with a good arm, the NFL is going to be salivating at his measurables. But I don't know if he can throw the football consistently. And when you're, you know, you've got a pretty good idea when you talk about completion percentage. And you know, if you're below that 62% mark, you're really not a prospect. And we've seen some guys get some love that were below that. But Fitzgerald has to absolutely improve as a passer. But at least I think for me, there's an excuse as to why right now he's so bad. But if you don't see a market improvement, I mean, he's got to go back for a senior year at worst, and not even a NFL prospect if he doesn't improve that accuracy, or at least an NFL quarterback prospect.
Yeah, you're right. The old school guys are going to rule him out right offhand with the 54% completion percentage that he had last year. And not only that, but averaging under 7 yards per attempt. So it's not like he was really picking up huge.
That's throwing the ball down the field, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of was. I mean, he's over 10 yards per completion, but the accuracy doesn't really outweigh that. And then as we had Blake Murphy on last year, who has some scouting experience, and he talked about touchdown to interception ratio being important, then we have just barely over a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. So, like you alluded to when you said the Tebow comparisons, a lot of the damage that Fitzgerald does is on the ground. And he was extremely effective on the ground. He rushed for over almost 1,400 yards, averaged 7 yards per carry, and rushed for 16 touchdowns. So this is an effective runner. But when you look at his numbers from an athletic standpoint coming out of high school, not too sure he's that much more athletic than, say, a JT Barrett. Now, the thing about Fitzgerald, like you said, he is 6'4", 6'5", and 230 pounds. So he's much bigger, and he's got that NFL prototype size. But I think he's got a long way to go as a passer. I think it's interesting to keep an eye on him because it wasn't until last year that he even really started to even attempt many passes.
And again, I'm not sure if that's an excuse or if that's a valid, you know, that's something valid.
I think it's something valid. I mean, but it's something why he's going to come back next year. I don't anticipate him declaring after this year. I think he's an incomplete player. And he's going to be 22 in January. That's not a death knell as a prospect. So let's say he comes back for senior year. He'll be 23 going into the draft. That's fine for a quarterback.
The problem would be, and it's something that you've talked about, if he is 23, it's not a big deal. But if he's 23 and still has to learn how to throw the football, it's a big deal. And so that's why you wonder. The thing is, he might have a coach in Dan Mullen who has gotten Josh Harris, Alex Smith, obviously Tebow, and then Dak Prescott, all guys that have just been overwhelmingly successful in college. And, you know, two of those guys were first-round picks, and Dak Prescott, along with Alex Smith, look like guys that are going to be long-term NFL starters. If somebody can get all of it out of him, And the other thing about all of those guys listed, they were all seniors. So you're probably right. Fitzgerald's probably not even an option for 2018. But if anybody can kind of convert him and get him to be an NFL quarterback, it probably would be Dan Mullen.
I don't think it hurts that Dak Prescott comes in as a fourth-round pick and becomes an immediate impact starting quarterback. And, I mean, it remains to be seen if he's going to be able to keep up that pace. But a lot of people were down on Dak Prescott's passing ability at this stage in his college career. So Fitzgerald has that going for him. I expect him to be back next year and be part of the 2019 class. But definitely somebody that we should mention just because of the proficiency and just how prolific he's been as far as production in terms of rushing yards, passing yards, and touchdowns overall.
The final guy is getting some hype. He is a guy that could be the big-time riser to the non-dialed in. So I'm guessing if you listen to this show in August, you probably already know this name. And Justin and I want to get that out, get it out here so we can be firsters in this whole situation. And he is also, I think he's just a redshirt sophomore. Am I wrong about that?
No, that's right. He's a redshirt sophomore. He transferred from Baylor and sat out last year. The only production we have is 2015.
Right. And his name is Jarrett Stidham. He was obviously the transfer, as Justin alluded to, from Baylor. Stidham is a guy going to Auburn. You know, they've had some there with quarterbacks, but he fits the size profile. 6'3", he's listed at 220. We've seen him have huge success, but that was in the Baylor offense that, you know, everybody's had success. He gets to Auburn. He's the starter. Does he take that next step? Is he a guy that will be able to put up those same numbers at an SEC school? And will he be a guy that can put up those same numbers, you know, throwing the ball 500 times a year? I don't think he's that good.
Well, Auburn's kind of had a stall at quarterback since Cam Newton. I mean, Nick Marshall was kind of decent. There were some people that liked him as a quarterback prospect, but the NFL certainly didn't, and they were ready to convert Nick Marshall back to defensive back. And that was what Nick Marshall had been recruited as originally when he went to Georgia before transferring and going through the JUCO ranks and getting back to Auburn. So Stidham goes from Baylor, of course, among all the turmoil that was going through the Baylor program after a promising 2015 freshman season as a high recruit, athletic guy, a guy who can run, a guy who can throw the ball. He got three starts that year in 2015, converted almost 69% of his passes, and like you said, 12 touchdowns in the three starts. Showed he can run a little bit. He left amid the turmoil, and now he was kind of doing the recruiting dance. There were a lot of people after, a lot of schools after Jarrett Stidham. This is a very sought-after recruit, and now I think Auburn feels like they've solved their quarterback problem for the first time in a long time. He almost became the starter immediately upon arriving on campus. So it's easy to understand why this guy is thought of as a player who – very well might come out after his redshirt sophomore year, where he'll be about 22 years old. If he decides to declare, he'd be about 22 years old right at the start of his first NFL season. So I don't think it's unreasonable to think that this is a player who might declare early. As Seth said, he's got the standard size for an NFL quarterback, and he definitely has the athleticism that teams like. So let's see how he does. It's very limited amount of tape, and we don't have any tape on him from last year, but this is a player I think could be on the rise, and I think that's pretty commonly held belief, especially between like us, the draft community, and the fantasy football dynasty community. I've heard them talk a lot about Stidham as well.
And the thing is, Auburn's had success with one-year wonders at quarterback. Not that Cam Newton hasn't gone on to be great, but they've had success with guys that just came in for 1 year and put up big numbers. So it's funny because you think you could have a guy like Stidham for 3 years and you might only get him for 1 year if he's too good in the first year. It's kind of that catch 22 for Auburn fans. They want him to lead them to a national title, but if he's a guy that does that, if he's a Heisman Trophy candidate, like you said, with his already prolific numbers in just three starts, and then if it goes, you know, in a similar fashion, following that, there's no reason he wouldn't declare. And let's look at his competition. If he was, you might say, well, he's only going to have, you know, let's say he starts 14 games. He's only going to have 17 starts.
Right. So, right. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility for Stidham to declare after this year. And that being said, we've spent a lot of time on SEC quarterbacks where one who might declare,
yeah,
who has 2 years of eligibility left, is probably the best of the bunch. So much like last week when we discussed Big Ten prospects and Big Ten quarterbacks, you know, we love to start with the quarterbacks, but geez, sometimes it's just a stretch to really even place these guys in the NFL.
Let's get into the guys we're watching. Again, we're not saying they're the best prospects, but most of these guys are the best prospects.
Some of these guys are the best prospects, and I think let's start out with a player who, you know, everybody knows, everybody's been talking about, and some people say might be the best running back in the class and might be the better running back than his former teammate who went fourth overall this year, and that's Darius Geis, the running back out of LSU. He was the top running back, top rusher in the SEC last year as a true sophomore, and he comes back for his true junior year. Geis was like a 4.6 guy, and he had limited lateral agility in the shuttle coming out at the opening, the Nike Spark Camp. But it's pretty clear on tape that he's improved on those numbers, and I think LSU had him clocked closer to the 4.4s or 4.3, high 4.3 range when he ran the 40 at their spring practices. So, in fact, he was reportedly timed at 4.35 in 2014. So that's now over 3 years ago. He definitely – I don't know that he looks like a 4.3 guy, Seth, but he looks like a player who's much faster than 4.6. I think he's legit. He's a big-time prospect, and much of the way that we talked about Barkley last week, last time I was talking about how Barkley is always looking for the home run, I think Geis is a little bit more natural of a running back. I would say from what I've seen of the two to this point that I would put Geis ahead of Barkley. But it's admittedly, it's close. And both these guys are really, really good players. And I think that, you know, we have seen running backs go in the first round of late. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that both those guys go in the first round. I think Geis is listed at about 5'11", 218 pounds, so he's a little bit lighter than what Barkley's listed at. I think he's about 10 pounds lighter. I don't think – I mean, 218 pounds is plenty big for a running back. So I think these are guys that are going to be both drafted highly, and I don't see any reason why Geis can't at least repeat last year's performance.
My top guy – to watch and staying with LSU, going to the defensive side, Arden Key. The one, well, obviously there's going to be more than one question that he has to answer, but the one question I'm going to have about him, and he's tweeted out that he's up to 255 pounds, but I guess we'll see when he gets to the combine, is, you know, he's listed by LSU at 238, and he's 6'6".
They've actually upped his listing in recent
– Have they now?
Yeah, in recent weeks, they've actually upped Arden Key's listing, and he is now listed at 265. So they're saying he's tacked on – right.
27 pounds.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, I hope so, because that's really
– that's where he needs to be, right?
Right, and from a playing on-field perspective, when you look at Key – coming out, I think that would be your biggest question. You have some questions. You always have question with LSU because of the way they scheme their defensive ends and they don't allow them to be free. But obviously, Key had 12 sacks last year. He's a phenomenal pass rusher. He's not getting the Danielle Hunter treatment that we saw a couple years ago where he's not being used properly. But the other question he'll have is going to be about off the field. And he's not a red flag from a behavioral incident standpoint. It's just, why did you step away? And it's an easy question to answer, but when NFL teams have to invest, and we're talking about a guy that, you know, if his trajectory continues based on what he did last year, I would say he's probably a lock to be a top five pick. Would you not?
Yeah, he's projecting to be a top five, top 10 pick. You know, if people are not concerned about why he stepped away, and it doesn't seem to be that huge of a concern because he stepped away during the offseason. He was back in time for offseason work. And he came back in presumably great shape and much stronger. He had a shoulder injury that he rehabbed and, again, presumably got much stronger in the rehab process. So I'm not overly concerned with this. It's just a question I would ask, just say, hey, guy, what was going on? I mean, he's only 21 years old, so there's a lot that's going on. These guys are in school. They've got a lot of responsibilities. It's a different world, especially when you're attending school away from your family, perhaps. I mean, there's no reason to think that Arden Key can't produce on the field. Like you said, he had 12 sacks last year, and that was the school record, which is kind of crazy because we've seen a lot of highly dominant defensive linemen come out of LSU in recent years, including Barkevious Mingo, who is number 6 overall pick.
And so Key is, you know, he's a guy, I think, with that bulked up. And I, you know, like I said, I the last I had looked was that he said he was up to 255. So now they're saying he's up to 265. And that's a big guy at 6'6", 265, which is probably where he needs to be from a weight standpoint. Does he stay as, you know, explosive? Does he maintain his ability to change direction? All that will be fun to watch with Key.
Next guy I want to talk about is Nick Chubb. It's another running back. He's out of Georgia, and he's a true senior. And Chubb, if you'll recall, a couple of years ago had a devastating knee injury. He was able to return from that and play significant time last year, but he just looked like he had lost some of the explosiveness. When you look at his high school testing, he was an incredibly fast and explosive guy for being over 220 pounds. But it looked like he lost some of that last year, and he was still productive. So now he's still in kind of a timeshare role with the other Georgia running back, Sony Michel, another senior running back. Chubb is going to be watched closely this year to see if he's all the way back from that knee injury, because it was so devastating. You don't want another Marcus Lattimore situation, but if Chubb puts together another full season, then athletically and production-wise, he could end up being in the conversation with the other guys, Geis and Barkley. I think he's still going to be a tick behind those guys because they're going to continue the scouts – the personnel people are going to continue to point to that knee injury and the risk involved with that. But as we've talked about many, many times, if you have removed yourself from those injuries by a year or several years, then you kind of rebuild that credibility. Chubb has a chance to do that this year. I'm rooting for him because that was such an ugly, ugly incident. You know, his knee bent in such an ugly way couple years ago, and he was off to such a great start, averaging like 7-8 yards a carry that year. It'd be fun to see him get back to where he was and really compete with these other guys for top billing, or maybe provide some team a great, great value on day two while teams chase these other two guys, Geis and Barkley, on day one.
The next guy on my list, I think a lot of hardcore fans are going to know, but when you talk about offensive linemen, you always hear guys getting pushed up. And this may be the case, but it also could be that this guy is just incredibly athletic and versatile, and he's going to work his way in to being a you know, kind of a top pick. And that's Martinez Rankin out of Mississippi State. Bulldogs are heavily represented in this episode, obviously. When you look at Rankin, they have him at 6'5" and about, you know, just under 3'10", but he has a great athletic profile. The questions with these guys, and this is really all offensive linemen at this point, is how quickly can they transition to the NFL, and can they, you know, can left tackles stay at left tackles? Or the left tackle position. And that is a question that Rankin is going to have to answer from an athletic standpoint.
I'm a little wary of this guy because he's a JUCO transfer. He's only got 1 year starting under his belt. He did get some hype late last year where we thought he might declare, but he ended up coming back. So I think that's to his benefit. Now he gets another year to start at the SEC level. And I do think his athleticism is a bit of a question mark, but he looks like a guy who can at least transition to guard. And he looks at least that athletic. So it's going to – I'm going to be – you know, I always look at these offensive linemen. I always look at their testing numbers in the end because I want to make sure they can move side to side. And I'm not always sure of that when I watch them on tape. So maybe that's me not knowing the position as well as I could. I freely admit that. But my system of ruling out guys that don't move well laterally also – tends to rule out some guys who don't succeed. So we'll see with Rankin. I think I was kind of hot and cold with him, and I thought that he would have been better served to return to school instead of declaring last year, and he did. So I'm glad, and I'm glad I get a second look at him this year. Next guy on my list is Christian Kirk. He is the receiver out of Texas A&M, and also a dynamic punt return guy. But I've seen some criticism of Kirk that he might not be that athletic. If you look at his high school numbers, that really flies in the face of that criticism. He was a sub 4.5 guy, even a mid 4.4 guy coming out of high school. You know, they tried to get him the ball in space and create yards after catch opportunities. So he doesn't have great yards per reception numbers. At this point in his career, it's only about 12 yards per reception on 163 catches. But that's through only two seasons. He is piling up numbers. He also has 16 touchdowns receiving, and then he has added another 5 touchdowns on punt return. So I think Kirk has been a little bit unfairly criticized, and I think he has a chance to have a breakout season. And I think that part of his limitations is as far as yards per catch and playing down the field have to do with Texas A&M's quarterback situation since Johnny Manziel's left.
I mean, they've got like 60 good quarterback prospects. It's just none of them have actually been good.
I think a lot of them have transferred out too.
Well, yeah, exactly. Next guy on my list, Calvin Ridley out of Alabama. I wonder if Ridley's descent in terms of statistical output is going to be held against him when it was obvious that a lot of it, and by it, has to do with who's been throwing him the ball as it, you know, kind of reduced down from his dominant freshman year where he put up 89 catches for, you know, just over 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns, to dropping to 72 catches for only 769 yards. Numbers went down across the board except for touchdowns. And so I think you have to be happy about that in terms of 7 touchdowns both years.
Yeah, I mean, there's a faction of people who weren't sure that Jalen Hurts was going to win the starting job out of Alabama this year, and I'm not sure that that's been 100% decided, but I haven't heard anything out of it. You know, Ridley was a 4.6 guy out of high school, but he's improved to a mid 4.3 guy, according to their spring testing. Since then, it hasn't really translated to big play yards per reception numbers, but I think you, as you alluded to, that might have more to do with the quarterback than with the player. So Ridley is definitely a player that I'm interested in. And I'm not quite sure where he's going to fall because he doesn't have those eye-popping numbers that you would like to see out of a high early-round draft pick. I mean, for his career, we're talking about 11.3 yards per catch, 14 touchdowns receiving in 30 games. And to boot, he will turn 23 in December. So it's almost imperative that he declares for the draft, because if he comes back for a senior season, he'll be a 24-year-old rookie going on 25. So I really don't have an explanation. He's not a redshirt, so I really don't have an explanation for why he is so old as a true junior, but that's where we are with him. I think he's a good player, though, so we'll see. I think Alabama players, especially Alabama skill players and edge players on defense, get very overrated. So it's difficult to gauge how these guys are going to translate to the pros.
I'm interested, and I've seen a nice comparison I kind of agree with. I don't know if Ridley's as good of a route runner, but Stephon Diggs, you know, similar size, similar build. Diggs plays, you know, he ran a 4.46, which is great, but he plays faster. So you wonder if Ridley, you know, and he had similar quarterback deficiencies at Maryland. Diggs also had some injury issues and concerns, is why he fell so far in the 2015 NFL draft. So, but it'll be good to watch and something to kind of follow along with Ridley. You got two more. Let's get to those.
Yeah, I wanted to say, though, interestingly enough, Diggs is going into his third NFL season, and he's only a year older than Calvin Ridley. So
right. The age thing is,
he has that going for him, too. I do have a couple more, and they're both from Alabama as well, so we'll just knock them both out. But Minkah Fitzpatrick is, I think, the top cornerback prospect in the draft, and some people want to move him to safety. Alabama, from the last I checked, they want to play him more as a corner this year. Incredibly productive, incredibly athletic player, and a guy who I think – is almost a surefire top 15 pick if he just doesn't get hurt this year. To give you an idea, Fitzpatrick is listed at 6'1", 209. He ran a 4.5 out of high school. I expect that he's improved upon those numbers. He was a first-team All-American and first-team SEC last season. Last year, 6 interceptions, 7 pass breakups. He's got 8 interceptions, 18 pass breakups. He scored 5 touchdowns in his career in 2 seasons. So to me, he's Alabama's best prospect. He's a legitimate top 15, top 10 prospect coming into this season. And I know, again, if people want to move him to safety, that's fine. I think he'll get his first shot at cornerback because of the height, the length, the speed, and the production. So he's a dynamic player to me. I don't have very much question about him coming into this year. The other guy I wanted to mention, Deshaun Hand, he was a 5-star recruit. In fact, I think by some estimations, he was the top recruit that year out of high school. And he has not lived up to that billing. Now, as we know, Alabama runs a lot of rotational sets from their defensive line. So we see a lot of late bloomers come out of Alabama defensive line. Dalvin Tomlinson, for example, last year. To a degree, Jonathan Allen, who kind of just emerged his last 2 seasons, Hand hasn't got there yet. He got into trouble with the law. It doesn't seem like he's going to be suspended for that indiscretion. I think it was a DUI, right? Now it's time for him to put production to paper and really emerge as a threat on their defensive line. He hasn't done so yet, but I fully expect, for one thing, he's not going to get suspended, so he's going to have every opportunity to play. And I really do think this is a guy who's going to be a late breakout player. And we're going to see Deshaun Hand get first-round talk when all said and done. Even though at this point he hasn't really done anything to justify this, I have very little doubt he's going to get first-round or maybe early second-round talk.
The Fitzpatrick one's going to be interesting to me, because is he going to be, you know, it kind of reminds me of Jalen Ramsey from a couple of years ago. So we'll see kind of what happens with that. That takes us to our risers, and if you want to win a 10-month subscription to RotoViz, this will be what you need to tweet at Justin. Make sure you follow the show. Make sure you like the show on iTunes. Give us a rating. And we each have a riser, so tweet Justin or myself at AFC2NFC or at SCOXFB, our two risers, so one each. Go ahead with yours.
Sorry, my riser is Lorenzo Carter, the edge player out of Georgia. He's listed at 6'6", 242, so he's that outside linebacker, that 3-4 outside linebacker type. He's an explosive guy. He had a 40-inch vertical coming out of high school, 4'6", 40. To this point in his career, only 9.5 sacks in 39 games, but last season he had 5 sacks. He really rebounded last year after a completely invisible sophomore year. So I think Lorenzo Carter is a late bloomer and a player that Tony Pauline, who is a plugged-in draft – he's as plugged-in as draft analysts get, and he has named Lorenzo Carter as a breakout player. I agree. Watching this guy, he just looks like the type of player who's going to emerge kind of like Leonard Floyd did late in his Georgia career as a redshirt junior, and Leonard Floyd ends up going in the top 10. So Carter, I don't know if he's going to reach those heights, but I think he's going to have his best season yet as a Georgia Bulldog, and he's that type of player.
My guy is DJ Chark out of LSU, and he's a guy that hasn't really put up big numbers. He didn't have a catch his first two seasons until his bowl game, and then took over as much as a LSU receiver can take over in 2016. 6 starts last year, had 26 receptions and 466 yards, which was second most on the team, and had tied for the highest amount of receiving touchdowns on the team with 3. None of that's great. But what is great is everything about Chark, the player. He's listed now at 6'4", just a shade under 200 pounds. He's not going to be 21 until the 23rd of September of this year. So he is a true four-year senior, and he's going to be 21 when he graduates and gets drafted. And the best part about Chark is he's allegedly, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but he's allegedly running in the 4.3s. That's what's being reported, right?
Yeah, he's a burner, and we've seen this with a lot of LSU guys receiver-wise, and maybe it not come to fruition. For example, Traven Doral was a track guy, and he was supposed to be running in the 4.4s, and it just didn't pan out that way, and he ends up going undrafted. But if you look at Chark, he's 6'4". He's listed at 6'4", so we can assume he's going to at least be 6'2.5", 6'3".
Right.
And he looks it. We knew that Malachi Dupree coming out of LSU was going to be an athletic guy, and his testing didn't let us down. So I'm fairly confident that Chark's going to be a speedster.
Even if he's a a low 4.4 guy, if he's legit over 6'3", that's really a unique.
Right. And also Doral is – graduated. Dupree has gone to the draft. So now you're pretty much left with Chark as the most experienced receiver returning to this team. And they do have a senior quarterback in Etling. So you hope that there's some chemistry that's developed and maybe you get a big season out of this guy. You know, it's funny. A few years ago, we saw Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry come out of this school. And since then, there hasn't really been a great go-to guy, and it's probably the quarterback's fault more than anything.
It's one of the grave mysteries of our time for college football.
They just cannot recruit quarterbacks.
It's completely crazy.
Recruit quarterbacks, but they just don't develop them. I mean, I guess Brandon Harris was a a big time quarterback recruit, but now he's a graduate transfer at UNC, having not done anything with his college career to this point.
Exactly. So, again, if you would like to win a subscription to RotoViz, thanks to the guys over at RotoViz, you need to tweet at Justin or I, our two risers for the SEC this coming year. First person, one giveaway. First person gets it. I'll get your information over to the guys over at RotoViz so you can get that 10-month subscription to probably the best analytical fantasy site available at this point.
Yeah, definitely worth – I mean, it's RotoViz is definitely worth paying for the subscription, especially if you're into fantasy dynasty leagues and, like, the more complex daily fantasy, things like that. But – you know, great opportunity. So tweet us. Again, I'm at AFC, the number 2, NFC, and Seth is at SCoxFB. And before we get out of here, Seth, let's talk about our predictions for the slider or biggest disappointment. For me, it's a guy who actually played really, really well down the stretch last year, but I just have no faith in his health. That's Bo Scarborough, the running back out of Alabama. So another Alabama guy on this list. I mean, Alabama, they've been so successful. They kind of dominate SEC talk from time to time. But Bo Scarborough has had two ACL injuries. He's coming off a broken leg at the end of last season. When he's played, he's been pretty dynamic. Last year, 812 yards rushing and 6.5 yards per carry, 11 touchdowns. Like many Alabama backs, not very involved in the passing game, only 4 catches. And for his career, he's only played in 20 games. So we've only seen spurts of this guy. Last year was the most involved we've ever seen him. But coming out of high school at 230 pounds, he was already running a sub 4.6 40 and showing better lateral agility numbers than what we saw out of Derrick Henry. I do not think Bo Scarborough is on Derrick Henry's level. And I think some people are going to try and put him on Derrick Henry's level. So I caution this. I think that Alabama's a crowded backfield. They've got Damian Harris. They've got Jacobs. They've got other freshmen coming in, Najee Harris and other guys. It's a very, very crowded backfield. And I'm not sure that Scarborough, A, is going to stay healthy. B, is going to get the number of carries that are going to sustain. And he's a redshirt junior. And he is going to be 23 years old in a month. So all of that working for him or working against him. I mean, even if he declares at the end of this redshirt freshman year, redshirt junior year, he's going to be a 24-year-old rookie very early on in his rookie season. So Bo Scarborough is my call to disappoint.
And the guy I think could disappoint this year, and we talked about his quarterback earlier, and it has little to do with him as a player, and that's Antonio Callaway out of Florida. Player on the field, but man, he's probably going to get heavily overlooked because of that has surrounded him at quarterback. You talked a little bit about last year. Not a terrible year last year. Not terrible, but not great by any means. And he's a guy that also has some question marks off the field. Two separate incidents in his career. And so now, and then he's another guy that we've kind of talked about these receivers. And again, Callaway looks like a guy that could be a very good athlete, a guy that could be kind of that really strong multi-target guy, but he's allegedly a mid 4.4 guy, only 5'11 and 197 pounds. A lot of just question marks. And I'm not sure that he's going to have the year that he needs to have to get into that top receiver talk that some people I've seen mention. And so he's the guy that I think could potentially fall again, not because I think he's a bad player, but you know, much like Bo Scarborough, a lot of outside forces working against him.
Yeah, Callaway. I mean, Callaway was accused of sexual assault. He was cleared of that, but he's also had other issues as far as marijuana. And now he's suspended currently as of August 13th. He, along with six teammates, are suspended for the opener against Michigan. So this is like a player who just has not been able to stay out of trouble. So, yeah, to me, this Antonio Callaway is a pretty clear-cut slider. In fact, I think Scarborough and Callaway for vastly different reasons, because Scarborough, through no fault of his own, other than his own, I guess, genetics or fragility in terms of health, and then Callaway for, in some ways, his inability to stay out of a bad situation, and other ways to put him, I mean, his inability to stop putting himself in bad situations. So on one hand, he was accused of something that he apparently didn't do, and then on another hand, he keeps getting caught for things that he does do. So it's been a rocky road for him at Florida, and you hope that a guy this age eventually gets it turned around.
Yeah, and so I won't write him completely off. And like I said, I think he's got talent, but yeah,
Yeah, and
it's
I think we need more information, especially in light of the fact that there were these allegations against him that he was cleared of at one point. So I think it's fair to say we should at least wait until we have more information on this, but there is a fact of the matter. He is suspended for the opener.
and we just had a single hot take today, and it's one of those situations where you just, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of information you can gather. You can get information from different people. But one thing that's tough, that's tough to find, and Justin puts together a lot of lists for this and prospect lists, is finding prospects' age. And you've told us before, sometimes you have to do a little bit of detective work to see if you could possibly figure out when his birthday was, and then work backwards based on tweets and
Yeah,
things of that nature.
I totally. I remember Kevin White coming out of West Virginia. People had to track down his age through his girlfriend's tweets. And there was some discrepancy, like the Chicago Bears, after they drafted him, said happy, I think, 22nd birthday. And his girlfriend came back and said, hey, he's 23. And it's like, holy crap, I hope the Bears knew that before they picked him. Just not that 23 is old, but you hope that the team that picks the guy knows how old he actually is. And we saw actually some similarities with Michael Thomas coming out of Ohio State, where the Ohio State website or one of the Ohio State blogs had him listed as a 21-year-old, even though he was a fourth-year junior. And it didn't quite match up to what level he was academically. So it turns out he was probably a year older than that too. Not a big deal in some cases, but in other cases, a very big deal. And in this case, in the case of your hot take, quite a big difference, right?
Right, and so we talked about him earlier, DJ Chark. I think he's going to be a riser this year. Whether you agree with that or not is really irrelevant when you look at the fact that he's 20 years old. At Life's Your Cup, a few view on the Twitter, kind of went over why he doesn't think Chark is a top three receiver as ranked by Todd McShay, in McShay's initial 2018 wide receiver rankings, which, to be fair, should give me pause on listing DJ Chark as a potential riser. But nonetheless, Chark was 6'1" as a recruit, now listed at 6'4", and he'll be 22 this year, never led team in receiving. And unfortunately for FUSU, DJ Chark got a hold of that tweet and set the record straight in a bevy of ways, but mostly that he's not even 21 yet, and you can find this information on the LSU team website. Now, you can argue all you want. You know, we remember the Calvin Pryor year, 6'2", and he measures in at barely 5'11". But I don't really think teams are going to be lying about ages of prospects, do you?
No, I don't. I mean, part of the mystery of Michael Thomas was that Ohio State doesn't list the age of their players, so it's tough to track those guys down. I mean, it's with West Virginia and Kevin White, they list the month and day, not the year. So you have to do some detective work to find the year. But LSU very clearly lists DJ Chark's birth date right on their team bio. So it shouldn't really have been a question. I understand, though. I mean, our guy Fusu, he's got probably a ton of spreadsheets, and he missed this one. It's Chark's date of birth is right there on the LSU team page. It's 9/23/96. So our guy DJ Chark, he's going to turn 21 later next month and go into the NFL draft as a 21-year-old. He's not already 22. And, you know, you could say a lot of – you can argue that his production hasn't been great to this point, and I would make that argument. You can maybe argue about his height. I think – it would be a shocker to me if he's listed at 6'4 and he's actually only 6'1. But I don't think you can put much argument into his birth date. That would be some crazy stuff. That would be along the lines of stuff that's happened in Major League Baseball. And
with foreign players.
Right, with players that come from other countries. So it really doesn't happen from American high schools. I would be very, very shocked if DJ Chark's actually 2 years older than what he's listed at.
So, yeah, I mean, it's out there. You always know. You can have all the arguments you want about speculative stuff and definitely height and weight stuff. We are always cynical about that. But if you're gonna do the research, make sure you check out the college website.
Check out the team bio.
And make sure that you're not missing something clear. That's it from us. For tonight, we'll be back in a couple of days. We're going to wrap up the Power 5 and take a look at the non-Power 5.
Yeah, we're going to cram a lot of information next episode. It's going to be ACC. We're going to do non-Power 5. We've got a guest. We're going to be busy. And then on this weekend coming up, we've got actual college football games. And then next Thursday on August 31st, we've got the official opening of college football when Ohio State travels to Indiana and takes on the Indiana Hoosiers in Bloomington. Great town, by the way, Bloomington. I appreciate all those people for hosting Ohio State fans and being very gracious in the face of defeat. I mean, they're just a great group of people out there.
Yeah, they'll enjoy the hostile takeover of the
I mean, no, to be honest, though, that is one of my favorite college campuses to ever visit, Indiana University at Bloomington, Indiana. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, at least as far as I remember it, but just a beautiful campus and great group of people that go there. And I joke, but I was looking at the schedule next Thursday, August 31st. Tons of college football. So, I mean, the floodgates are opening. This weekend, there's like a crack in the dam, and you can maybe try and plug it with bubble gum. But by next Thursday, the dam bursts. The floodgates are open. College football season is upon us, Seth.
And we'll be here for all of it. We'll be here to break down prospects before games start and review kind of how they're looking every week after the games are played, guys that are rising, guys that are falling, and we'll have a bevy of guests on as well. It's going to be
our weekly season. Josh Allen update, since he's going to be the best quarterback of all time.
Right. And we'll, you know what, we'll get some Josh Allen truthers on here. We'll reach out to our buddy Matt Miller.
In fact, we're going to talk about Josh Allen on our next episode. So stay tuned for that. I mean, we've got a lot of these Power 5 guys, Josh Allen, Cortland Sutton, and some of these other group of 5 guys, that we have talked about and that are getting hype, we're going to talk about on our next episode. So stay tuned for that.
That's it from us. Check us out on Blog Talk Radio. Check us out on SoundCloud. We'll be on iTunes still. Give us a review. We always appreciate it. Hit us up on Twitter at AFC, the number 2, NFC, and at SCoxFB. If you want that RotoViz subscription, thanks to the guys over at RotoViz. Give us our risers for this year for the SEC. First one to tweet us on a timestamp wins the giveaway this week. So we appreciate RotoViz. We appreciate you guys for always listening and checking us out. And we'll be back in a couple of nights to wrap up our college football preview.